Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're streaming live on our website. That's focusonfemales.com. We are brought to you by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, who brings you the annual Women's Healthcare Symposium here in Tampa. The fourth annual will be March 21st, 2008. The Radio Healthcare Clinic and the symposium were produced to give you an interactive community health safety net whose mission is to save lives and protect families, making you a lay expert in your own independent personal medical problem. This in turn will enable you to better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical costs. This week's dry eye tip involves a patient that came to me this week as a second opinion. She was waking up in the middle of the night with eye pain and was told she had dry eye and just used drops. Well, it turns out that she has a condition called recurrent erosion, and that's when the eyelid actually sticks to the surface of the cornea during the sleep, and then when the lid tries to open, which is a normal phenomenon during sleep with eye movement, it rips off epithelial cells from the surface of the eye, causing exquisite pain. The bottom line is, if you have dry eye or symptoms in the middle of the night, make sure your doctor looks at you and evaluates you for recurrent erosion. There's excellent therapies for it. You don't have to suffer with this. It potentially is a blinding disease because it can ultimately scar the cornea and you will lose your sight. Now, this week's topic is multiple sclerosis. We want you to make sure you call in with your questions. And for future topics, please feel free to email me with topics of interest to you and your family. You can contact me by going onto our website, and on the website there's a button you can click and email me the medical topic of interest for you, and we'll go ahead and schedule a program and address those issues. As I said, today we're going to tackle multiple sclerosis. We have here Dr. Robert Wilson, who's standing in for his colleague Dr. Mark Cancioni, who was unable to make it today. And Rob Wilson, you may remember, was here a few weeks ago as we talked about headaches and migraines. Dr. Wilson is a board-certified neurologist, a partner at Tampa Neurology Associates and Axiom Clinical Research. The Tampa Neurology Associates has had 2 decades of providing neurologic care to Tampa Bay. Dr. Wilson has been part of the Tampa Neurologic Associates for the past 5 years. Dr. Wilson was trained in neurology at the University of Pennsylvania Health System in Pennsylvania. He also completed a fellowship in neuro-oncology and pain at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He was on staff at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia as a neuro-oncologist prior to moving to Florida in 2001. During his time at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, he developed an interest in research and clinical care for neurological pain. His practice in Tampa neurology is focused on migraines, headaches, multiple sclerosis, memory disorders, and hospital consultation. Besides direct patient care, he's also involved in clinical research and teaching. And with us today in the studio is an honor. It's an honor for me to have my sister here, who happens to be a young lady, 53, who is battling multiple sclerosis. And we will first review her, have Dr. Wilson, Rob Wilson, review her history, and then we will discuss history, treatment, and address any issues that come up. And again, we encourage everyone out there to call in if you have questions about multiple sclerosis, any question at all, any comments, please call in, and we will engage you and involve you with the conversation. Rob, welcome. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Stephen. Thank you for increasing public awareness for neurologic diseases. And I want to thank Susan for coming along today to share her own personal story about multiple sclerosis.
Thank you.
Susan, I just met a little while ago, but her story is actually, just spending a few minutes, is not that unusual. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 1994 when you started having some numbness on one side of your body, correct, Susan?
Correct, yes.
And prior to that, you had no other symptoms?
None that I remember, no.
Which is good to hear that it sounds like you really grabbed the bull by the horn. We do see people often sort of Monday morning quarterback or hindsight being 2020, they look back and they 4, 5, 6, 7 years prior they were having symptoms. And then you had pretty rapid diagnosis with the MRI of the brain at that time?
What happened was when I felt the numbness, I went to the doctor. And, of course, they had to do a battery of tests. And when they found out they were all negative, they then went to do the brain MRI.
Let me stop right there. Rob, is it typical that multiple sclerosis is one of the last things that is considered in a differential diagnosis, such as when Susan developed numbness and tingling?
I think it's really changing. The face of MS is really changing. One is due to MRI technology has enabled more rapid diagnosis, patient awareness. I think the MS Society, which is an incredible organization, has done a fantastic job in advocacy and public awareness. And I think the MS patients out there living in our country, the 400,000 plus, have just been sort of banging the drum trying to get people aware about. I mean, I must say that MS, prior to MRI technology, was a diagnosis that took many years to diagnose, probably convenient for the neurologist, but not easy for the patient.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, let's see, I graduated medical school in 84, and we were told back then to rule out other causes, and multiple sclerosis was always on the bottom of the list of differential diagnoses, rule out stroke and so forth. But it sounds like it's certainly risen up the list of differential diagnoses, and because I guess it's not that hard to detect and diagnose anymore with the technology we have.
Exactly. The old diagnosis was multiple attacks separate in time that could not be located to the same area of the nervous system. So that means people go for 2, 5 years, 8 years having recurrent events, and then sort of like year 8, you know, you're having another spell. This is probably multiple sclerosis. That was convenient for the doctor, but often the patients were, for lack of better words, pretty trashed by that time. MRI technology with some of the clinical trials or clinical observations with optic neuritis, which is inflammation of the optic nerve, has found that when people had optic neuritis, they have an MRI that is suggestive of MS, showing these white spots, plaques, lesions, UBOs, bright objects. It actually has a high predilection for MS, and we've actually moved forward now where we have clinically isolated syndrome where people like Susan, back in 1994, it's actually in 2007, 2008, very typical, one event, MRI suggestive, called clinically isolated syndrome, which means this would lead to MS, and it means treat early.
Question for you. How frequently does, because the MRI come up negative, but yet other tests are positive for MS, is there such a...
There are cases that way, and I tell you, I have about 400-plus active MS patients. I have one lady who actually her MRIs are negative, and her exam is really abnormal, and it really referenced concerning findings lower in her brainstem or upper spinal cord, which sometimes you might not see as well in MRI. And for her, a spinal tap helped. Spinal taps are not always helpful in the diagnosis of MS. You know, it's like people think you need to have a spinal tap. It's really a clinical evaluation. The MRI helps, and spinal taps can be, you can still have MS and have a negative spinal tap.
Okay. I think we should pull back here a little bit and get back to basics. Multiple sclerosis. Rob, how would you define multiple sclerosis?
Multiple sclerosis is really, I mean, that's a great question. As a neurologist, it's sort of ever-moving, changing idea. It really is an autoimmune disease where your immune system has turned on the brain and spinal cord, which is your central nervous system. And it's a disease that causes inflammation to generally the lining of the nerves, the myelin, which is this fatty lining of the nerves, which helps speed conduction and transmit messages.
Would you make an analogy with, say, an electrical system and the insulation over a electrical wire?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. You know, that insulating material health speed conduction, and it's sort of like if you have a cable and you rip the lining off it, that cable might not work as well. That cable, that myelin, is essential for speed transmission. That's one reason why when you destroy that, the nervous system functions better underneath coolness. That's why heat with MS is often very detrimental. People sort of decline. There's actually was a famous neurologist who's long gone and passed away a century ago named Uthoff, called the Uthoff phenomenon. When people get overheated, that's a warning sign for MS, that basically they sort of decline. They have any problems they have really sort of decompensate.
Now, we talked about, one point also to make, is it not the case that multiple sclerosis is a central nervous system disease as opposed to a peripheral nervous system disease?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like in medicine, we love to compartmentalize everything. The brain, spinal cord are really sort of similar structures. The central nervous system from the spinal cord are branches of like a tree branches called the peripheral nerves, and go to the muscles and skin, sensory nerve endings and organs. But multiple sclerosis is a disease that can affect the brain or spinal cord. And again, it's really important where people have problems. You know, it's interesting. People say, will come into the office and say, I have like 20 white spots in the high part of my brain, and they're doing fine. A lot of times it's where those little white spots, plaques, lesions are located. Something in a spinal cord or lower brain stem could really be devastating. So one strategic hit in the wrong area can make or break someone's functioning.
Now, it affects the central nervous system because that's where the myelin its sheath is, correct? There's no myelin in the peripheral nervous system.
There is myelin in the peripheral nerve, but it's that's a great question. We don't know why, because there are certain diseases like something called, this is a mouthful, chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, which affects the peripheral nerves and the lining of that. But we don't know why completely. And with MS also, we understand now that long-term MS has inflammation, and if untreated, can lead to degeneration.
We have a caller on the line, Sarah from Tampa. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Do you have a question about multiple sclerosis?
Yes. I had a question for the doctor and also for Susan. Is there any hereditary factors that play a role in getting MS?
Thank you, Sarah, for calling in. And hereditary factors, that's a really big issue. We do know that first-degree relatives, brother, sister, mother, father, you had the highest risk. Twins, identical twins. You know, we're trying to elicit what is this magical recipe of sort of what we know is that the right exposure, possibly to viruses in the first 10, 15 years of life, with the right sort of predilection or something that sort of the right genetic code that sort of puts that recipe together to give a tendency for it. I know it seems very confusing, but there is something about if someone is born in temperate climates like Ohio, Pennsylvania, and they live there the first 10 years of their life, they have a higher risk of MS. If someone was raised in the Caribbean for the first 10, 14 years of life, they have a lower risk. If someone from the Caribbean moves to New York City during the first 10 years of life, they have equal the risk with someone who's always been born and raised there. So there's something with the right sort of genetic susceptibility, with the right exposure at the right time of life. And it's weird is that that happens in the first 10, 14 years of your life, and then, like Susan and I were talking about earlier, something happens. Usually it seems as patient stories over and over again, they report something stressful, something happening to them, and then some kind of neurologic event happens 10, 15, 20 years later after, you know, this sort of probably childhood exposure.
What kind of increased risk does a sibling have?
I think it's like a 20-fold, some of the studies, 20-fold.
Okay. Sarah, you had a question for Susan?
Yes, I was wondering what are some of her coping mechanisms she has that she does when she has episodes, that how she deals with it?
This is an excellent question. In fact, Susan, I guess we can, since it was brought up by the caller, could you tell the listeners how you deal with multiple sclerosis on an overall basis? How do you, your mindset, how do you deal with each day?
Day-to-day stuff, yeah.
It's not easy, let me put it that way. When I was first diagnosed in 1994 and then confirmed, I made a conscious decision for me to control it as opposed to it controlling me. And afterwards, that's how I led my life. I tried to keep stress to a minimum, though, sometimes that is unavoidable. And as a matter of fact, that was one of the questions I was going to ask the doctor about dealing with stress. And then staying away from heat. I don't go into saunas or heat rooms because heat is devastating for me personally. It affects my extremities is where I have a lot of my MS.
So it affects where you live. It affects how you dress. It affects where you go.
Yes.
But from a psychological basis, is it easy to get down? Do you intentionally try to minimize the stress, but look at the positive things in life?
Definitely. Well, you have to. And what I've done also is I change the people around me. What I've done is realize there were certain people in my life that were very negative, and I need positivity. I'm a very positive person myself. And when you have negative people surrounding you, it's likely that even though you're positive, it's going to bring you down.
And in turn, that can affect your symptoms.
Exactly, yes. Exactly, and make them worse. Because you can have a little MS, but if you have negativity around you, that is going to even exacerbate what you can get.
That's interesting, because even without MS, if you're around negative people, that can affect you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must say something, too, is that I'm sitting next to Susan. You can't see her, but she's just, a beautiful woman. She moves around perfectly. She's very intelligent. Just talk to her for a few minutes. You know she's a bright person. I think she's a good example. I mean, you might want to talk about Susan, is that where often neurologic disease like MS, looks can be deceiving. People think of MS, they're going to expect to see somebody in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. or someone who is sort of disabled or scary looking, or someone you would stare at in a public place. But most people with MS look like your neighbor or anybody else.
That's very true. I'm lucky in that I have a relapsing remitting MS. That's to say that it's going to get to progressive, hopefully not. But because of relapsing and remitting, I can do things normally, and I look normal. I'm not in a wheelchair. However, I know I don't walk distances. As a matter of fact, I have a handicap sticker, so I park closer to where I need to go. I know my limitations, and I don't push my limitations.
Yeah, but I think sometimes, too, I think people might look at you, and it's hard for you to get sometimes validation externally, or people understand that when they look at you and they say, well, she's working and she looks good and she's smart. I mean, what's going on here? And it's like you have to almost struggle to convince people that you have issues with MS, probably.
And I work at that.
Yeah, that's
a job. It's you have to work at being that way and to make people understand. This is why programs like this are so important, so people understand what MS is.
And one thing I'm going to say in closing, and I'll be done, is that I think with people with MS caring for them on a daily basis, guilt is such a big issue, you know, that they look good on the surface. People don't understand what they're going through. It's a very mysterious disease, and it's a psychological tall order to sort of have people understand, to fit in a normal life, mm-hmm. not to feel guilty, not to overdo it for yourself, to set limits and say, that's okay, this is what I can do and not do, and be okay with that.
That's the key. You have to be comfortable with yourself and acknowledge, yes, I do have this disease. It's not going to go away, unfortunately, because there's not a cure. You have to live with it. That's why you need to control it, be comfortable talking to people about it, sharing your experiences, because then you can meet somebody in the street who's looking for somebody like you, that you can just share something of yourself with them, and it could make their day, they understand it, and they can go see a doctor and take care of their own MS.
Very good. We are going to go to a short break. We'll be back in a flash on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking about multiple sclerosis. Be right back.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
My friends, we have come to the end of a long journey.
After a long and crazy campaign, it's finally over, and Barack Obama has captured the White House.
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
Where will he take the country, and how will his policies affect your life? Look at it this way. It's only 1,461 days until the next presidential election. We're already counting. Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We just have a short 1 minute before we go to a quick break, but we're talking about multiple sclerosis, and I want to touch upon the autoimmune nature of it. Susan, do you have any other symptoms of, or potential autoimmune problems, such as thyroid disease or difficulty with your circulation?
I just got the results from my other MRIs. I had a thoracic and cervical MRI, which was just completed, and I found out there was a nodule on my thyroid.
Okay.
So I'm going to find out what that is when I get back.
So you may have an autoimmune thyroid problem.
Yes.
Okay, and we'll come back in a flash and talk more about multiple sclerosis and autoimmunity.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. President-elect Obama's transition chief says the incoming administration is looking at President Bush's executive order, stem cell research, oil and gas drilling, and other matters, and will likely reverse a number of them. John Podesta tells Fox News Sunday a president can use such orders to move quickly and not have to wait for Congress. A co-chair of President-elect Obama's transition team says Michelle Obama's main interest is her daughters, not executive decision-making. Valerie Jarrett says Michelle Obama wants to help women juggle a career and motherhood. New fighting in Congo has doctors fearing the worst. If the cholera-infected people scattered to escape the carnage, doctors trying to contain an outbreak there in a refugee camp say a massive exodus could spark an epidemic. and 5 people are dead. At least 18 have been wounded in a pair of bomb attacks in Iraq, one at a hospital west of Baghdad. The other hit a public health clinic. This is SRN News.
Barack Obama is the next president of the United States.
Well, let us summon a new spirit.
Is he the answer to some of the problems facing America?
Our climb will be steep.
Can he lead this country out of an economic downturn?
I promise you, we as a people will get there.
And how will his policies affect you?
I need your help, and I will be your president too.
Now more than ever, Talk Radio 860 WGUL. The Prescription Addiction Radio Show.
Times have changed. The medical system has no conscience as to what they will give a child. The mother who wouldn't take a Tylenol or a cold pill during pregnancy will give her child anything the doctor tells her to. The drugs we are pouring down our children's throats are the same drugs we don't want in our rivers and streams.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, brought to you by Novus Medical Detox. Sunday night at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
All right, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. We're talking about multiple sclerosis. I have Dr. Rob Wilson here and my sister Susan, who has multiple sclerosis. And we're talking specifically now about autoimmune disease. Since multiple sclerosis is considered an autoimmune disease, does that increase your risk of having or acquiring other autoimmune disease? Susan has a thyroid nodule that was just identified, although she has no obvious symptoms related to thyroid disease. But also she has issues with circulation. Tell us about your fingers.
Okay, a lot of times my fingers go numb, and there's tingling first, and they go numb. Typically, it's at the tip of my fingers and the tip of my toes, and they turn black.
So the fingernail beds turn blue or dark?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Rob, what does that indicate to you? Two possibilities.
Once, generally in medicine, we all know as doctors, we're trained as once someone has one autoimmune disease, there's a possibility of developing others. Thyroid's common, rheumatoid disease, Raynaud's. Lupus.
What is that? Tell me about Raynaud's. What is that?
It is, I mean, it's sort of a still poorly understood condition where there's this sort of constriction of the peripheral, meaning the fingers, toes, and people can have really bad circulation, pain.
So it's actually constriction of the blood vessels in the fingers and toes, and what does that lead to?
Severe pain. And I mean, fortunately, no one really has, like, amputation or strokes or death to finger digits, but extreme pain.
But for the average person, pain and change in the color of the nail beds.
And sometimes difficulty using those hands and feet.
Okay, so possibly some weakness as well.
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned rheumatoid arthritis. You mentioned thyroid disease,
lupus. Yes. We see a lot of thyroid in our MS patients, and it's not unusual. First of all, we've seen more thyroid nodules as routine or testing in patients with MS or without MS, but MS patients can have Hashimoto's, Graves' disease.
Hashimoto's being a thyroid disease, an autoimmune thyroid disease.
More slow thyroid. They have Graves', which is hyperactive thyroid. Mm-hmm. So with your MS patients, you always got to sort of be on your toes to think about what is MS, what other autoimmune diseases are happening, and then also very important, people with MS can have other health issues, like a heart attack. Like I saw my practice recently, a chest pain. And if it was MS, I said, well, your brother had a heart attack, you might be having a heart attack.
Now, so, that's completely independent of MS?
Yes, but you got to really be on your toes with MS patients.
So there may be some overlay of symptoms. So if a person comes in, the symptoms may be caused by MS or evolving MS, or it may be a completely independent disease, which also may be an autoimmune disease.
Yes, I mean, as you said earlier about more rapid diagnosis, the pendulum is almost sometimes almost swinging to a direction where everything you have now, if you have MS, is MS. So you got to think about other things that are not MS.
This is an excellent point. Don't get lax into thinking that, okay, these new symptoms or exacerbation of previous symptoms is MS. It may be something else. And if you're not able to look into it at a deeper level, in other words, if you just dismiss it as just MS, then you may miss something, another diagnosis, which is very important to identify because the therapy is completely different. Obviously, if you have a thyroid autoimmune problem, the treatment is thyroid related and not further MS therapy. Let's talk about pain with multiple sclerosis. Is there normally, you mentioned before about pain in the fingers possibly being related to multiple sclerosis or another autoimmune disease. Is that where the pain always is with multiple sclerosis when you get it, or could there be pain anywhere in the body, Robert?
It's interesting. When I was in training in the 90s, early 90s, we didn't talk about pain, fatigue, or cognition with MS, and they're really the biggest issues with MS. Number one complaint's fatigue, next one's pain or cognition, and then bladder issues. And it could be anywhere in the body, from arm pain. I've seen the worst pain with MS-related leg pain, neck pain, headaches.
Now tell me, the pain can be anywhere in the body. And what is it? Well, Susan, have you had an experience? I understand you've had experience with pelvic pain. Can you relate some information about that, how it was evaluated, and ultimately it was decided that it was related to MS?
It's like what you said before, is when you have a symptom, find out what it is and don't think initially that it is MS. So I started having pelvic pain, and I last think of it as an MS thing. So I went to my gynecologist, ruled out any gynecological symptoms. Went to a urologist, also ruled out. So finally I went to my neurologist that said, yes, I was experiencing pelvic pain. It was muscle spasms.
Okay, it's excruciating pain. Now, would it wake you up in the middle of the night? Would it occur during the day, this pelvic pain you had?
Mostly during the day. I was lucky that I was able to sleep. The leg pain, to get off on a side note, the leg pain I had during the night. But back on pelvic pain, it was very excruciating. At times, it just stopped me in midstream where I just had to stop.
And there's no, there was
and
no...
think, pause, get rid of the pain.
There was no warning sign that it would come up. It just out of the blue, you would get this excruciating pelvic pain.
Correct.
And ultimately, it was diagnosed as related to multiple sclerosis,
yes.
Muscle spasm.
Yes.
Rob, what are the typical therapies for this kind of excruciating pain from muscle spasm in the setting of multiple sclerosis?
It's actually, there are options. It is, for the patients out there, and probably for Susan also, it's a very difficult process to find the right mixture of things. Because people with MS can have twisting, burning, stabbing, cramping, locking of limbs and feet.
So from the multiple sclerosis
yes.
itself.
Yes. And so we use muscle relaxers, which can help, but they can be sedating. Sometimes we use medicines that are neuropathic, like Neurontin or Topamax.
When you say neuropathic, define that for us.
Medicines that were designed for really work on nerve endings. Often are antidepressants or anti-seizure medicines we found from experience sort of have this overlap in hitting those nerve endings.
So meaning that it would relax the nerve endings and decrease activity of the nerve.
Exactly, or modulate the pain.
Could that exacerbate MS then if you're actually relaxing a nerve?
No.
So it's all these drugs work on the peripheral nerves
and
primarily?
Centrally. Some of the antidepressants that are used for pain might work peripherally where the legs are and through the spine, but may also in the brain, because with MS too, there may be an issue of how the brain is perceiving the pain. So it's a very difficult process for people out there with MS to get pain control.
So you have to have a broad array of therapies. Uh-huh. Not one therapy is going to help.
Think out of the box.
Everybody.
You know, stretching, physical therapy, relaxation, pain medicine, narcotics if you need it.
We have a caller, April in Tampa. You're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare program with Steve Maskin. You have a question about multiple sclerosis.
Yes, I was wondering, can children get MS? And if so, what is the age that you would be diagnosed normally?
You know, that's a very good question. Fortunately, for most, it's still more of an adult disease. We do have in our practice, and even where I trained up in Philadelphia, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, we have had children. I've seen as young as 3 years of age. up to like 15, 16 years of age, and they can have similar symptoms of visual loss, weakness, seizures sometimes, more often confusion.
From multiple sclerosis?
Yes.
Do you have a sense of family history in those cases?
Often those cases, I mean, I'm not an expert in pediatric neuro for MS, but often those cases don't have a family history. And it's you know, it's almost like, you know, that's a great question you're asking. And as to what MS, we're learning more and more. I think when we're gone down the road, go down the road eventually, we're going to realize that what we're calling pediatric MS might be a different disease modulated by the immune system. It's one of its markers, and we're calling it MS.
Very good.
So do you see people that have relatives, distant relatives, that maybe there's a correlation, are you saying? Or
it's not, the correlation is still not really that strong yet.
Okay.
Hope that helps you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, April. Okay, let's talk about therapy for multiple sclerosis itself, the intrinsic disease, the autoimmunity. Rob, would you run over the different types of medications that are being used
in
treatment of multiple sclerosis?
Yeah, before we went on the air, Susan and I had a chance to chit-chat all these different medicines. The good news, it's growing at leaps and bounds, and things are happening. They are, in the early 90s, beta-seroine was indicated. Then there was Avonex, then Copaxone, then Rebif, Tysabri. These are medicines that are all injectable medicines. Some are once a day.
These are injected by the patient?
Yes.
Okay.
Or their relative might do it for them. And there's ways...
Similar to a diabetic might inject their insulin?
Some are. Tysabri is an intravenous infusion. So that's once a month, and Avonex is a once-a-week intramuscular injection.
Okay, but the others are
subcutaneous,
so the patient does it themselves.
Or the relative does it for them.
Okay. And but if we consider just class of drugs, they're the interferons?
The beta-seron, Rebif, Avonex are interferons, which the goal of these medicines are to modulate the immune system so it's less active on the...
Okay, so to decrease the attack on the on the nerves. And the next class of drugs?
Is Copaxone, which is sort of like similar to the lining myelin and does a whole pathway of sort of down-regulating the immune system. And then you have Tysabri, which almost sort of prevents a barrier for getting your immune system into your brain spinal cord.
Now, Susan, what therapy are you on now?
I'm on at Copaxone, daily injection.
Okay, and tell us how that's working for you. Tell us about whether you feel that it has decreased the frequency of your relapses, as well as the severity of your relapses. And then we'd like to know about potential side effects that you might have experienced from it.
Okay. I started on Copaxone in 96-97.
Which is 3 years after your diagnosis.
Correct. It was after Betaseron and Avonex came on the market. I decided not to do either one.
And why is that?
I did not like the side effects from those.
Had you tried that first?
No, read the package insert and directions for use, which I recommend everybody to read about when they're taking a pharmaceutical drug. And I did not like the contraindications, so I decided to wait.
What did you use, or you put on any therapy in 94 once you received the diagnosis before 97 when you tried the Copaxone?
No.
So you did not require anything at that time?
Correct.
Okay. And in 97, you went on the Copaxone. Tell us how it impacted your multiple sclerosis.
I think, looking back on it, I believe that it did lessen the severity of my exacerbations and that my exacerbations were not as frequent.
Okay. And you've been on it ever since?
On and off.
Okay.
When I had my cancer, I went off of it.
Okay. And this is something that we haven't focused on yet, and we'll come back to, that is, if there's any relationship with cancer and multiple sclerosis. But so you've been on the Copaxone ever since, and have you had any side effects on the Copaxone or from the Copaxone?
No, not that I know of, no. I don't feel any different. I have the fatigue that MS gives you. Watch out for the stress and everything, but not from the drug itself.
And Rob, is that your experience with Copaxone?
I mean, Copaxone is generally well-tolerated medicine. Some people do get, like, all the injectable medicines, some site injection issues. Some people can get fatigue from the medicine.
When you say site injection, the area where the needle...
gets redden, or sometimes people know some atrophy of the skin. shrinkage of the skin where the injections are. I mean, I think Susan's story is important, is that she was diagnosed in 1994 to start therapy in 97 when Copaxone got FDA approved to come out. In 2000, in the last few years, we don't wait that many years. We really try to push patients from diagnosis, start therapy, find a therapy that you can tolerate and that you can do.
And have you found that because of that approach, it has decreased the progression of the disease?
Yeah, I mean, beta-seron and Avonex have shown what clinically isolated syndrome, one event, MRI suggestive, treat early, you can have this incredible quieting down the disease. And I see patients in my practice who, again, you grab the bull by the horns, get them on therapy, and they are doing fine.
Excellent. Okay, we are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking about therapy of multiple sclerosis. This is Steve Maskin. We'll be back in a flash.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back. We're talking about multiple sclerosis on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. And we were discussing therapy of multiple sclerosis. Susan, 53-year-old with multiple sclerosis, has been on medication called Copaxone on and off for probably over a decade. And she was recently diagnosed as having some active lesions despite having been on the Copaxone. And Rob, I'd like to turn to you. At this point, what does the neurologist consider potential therapies?
Well, I think it's, again, as I keep saying, that I've been around long enough that it's expanding and it almost seems confusing to the patient. It is at times. Talking to Susan on the side, I think she has a relationship with her neurologist, which is the first step, that you have a doctor you can talk to and say things are not right, you know, push the envelope within safety. We do have her FDA-approved medicines. I know Susan's mentioned she might be going through some IV steroid treatments.
Yes, and steroid.
Yeah, some boluses of steroids we use sometimes to quiet down the immune system. We don't want to do it too long because there's issues of cataracts, mm-hmm. diabetes, mood issues, depression, bone osteoporosis, hypertension, things like that. Also, people use intravenous immunoglobulins, which is actually pulled from blood products to actually control MS. The other thing is down the road, there's navantrone, which is a chemotherapy at low doses that can help multiple sclerosis quiet down. And also down the road, there's such great interest financially, academically, for cures and better treatments. There's CAMPATH. There's oral medications that are being studied also.
Let me ask you, coming back to Susan's situation, so one approach is intravenous steroids, but that, of course, is fraught with problems if that is required on more than just once a cycle approach. And you mentioned IV, intravenous immunoglobulin. Another alternative would be plasmapheresis?
Not really used. The data's not there. A lot of complications. We try to find things. MS doesn't have to be lethal.
Plasmapheresis meaning basically washing the blood trying to remove those chemicals that are in the blood attacking the nerve sheath. So that's not been shown to be effective.
Yeah. Even sometimes people talk about bone marrow transplant, ways to really weaken the immune system. Again, MS doesn't have to be lethal, and safety is always the first stop.
Tell us about the IV immunoglobulin. What's your feel about that?
I do use a lot of it for people. It is screened for hepatitis and AIDS and mad cow, and it does often people with long-standing MS, early MS, difficult path of MS, of really having effect in terms of quieting down the disease. Again, there's no real large SARS series of studies to show hundreds and hundreds of patients, but we have reports and journal articles showing patients and selecting like dozen here, dozen there, doing well with it. I think also taking care of people with MS is more than just about disease activity. It's about wellness and keeping stress down and pain control and getting them sleeping and looking for other things. So sometimes I've seen my experience when people think they have active MS, it's really something else that's also going on in life. So you really got to look at the whole patient as a whole.
Now, of course, Susan has active lesions on your MRI.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to other alternatives, is the Copaxone used at a single dose, can it be increased, for example? Is there flexibility on that? And if so, is it effective?
It's really just a single dose. Okay. And I think sometimes people have tried doctors, doubling the dose, add a beta serum. We've done all types of stuff. And again, these are case reports, isolated studies, and it's sort of hard to know afterwards, was it the combination or increasing, or was just the disease quieting down itself?
How about the role of biofeedback?
I think, anything to help people with MS is great. I mean, physical therapy, acupuncture, good nutrition. I mean, a lot of people with MS is a very expensive disease. A lot of people live by themselves. Divorce rates high with MS, and a lot of people are tired. They're exhausted, going to the grocery store, preparing meals, a chore. So really, it's just, you got to look at the whole package. Get them exercising that they can endure without hurting themselves. Eating better.
That's a good point, exercise. And of course, we know that patients, if they increase their heat by exercising, then it can exacerbate. From your experience with all your patients with multiple sclerosis, what's a favorite type of exercise that doesn't exacerbate their multiple sclerosis?
Generally, something that's sort of like air conditioning controlled, good hydration, where patients can pace it. Like weightlifting machines where they can do low weights, high reps, and they can sort of stop and pause. Treadmill provides they're not weak to where they can actually pace themselves. Swimming. I think swimming is always like one of the best things you can do. Aquatherapy, yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi.
Excellent. I love that. Swimming would be awesome for people to get
swimming.
Exercise because we all need to get cardiopulmonary exercise. But of course, the multiple sclerosis patient is potentially limited. So, yeah, swimming sounds like an excellent choice.
It's being limited, even if you're in a wheelchair with MS. I mean, I know it's difficult, and I feel sort of guilty making this comment, but anything you can do, even if it means you have two soup cans in your hand doing like 100 repetitions, your upper body strength, it all, anything that you can do or can make a difference.
Excellent. Susan?
I also think, with me, exercise. It depends upon your doctor. My former neurologist did not want me to do any cardio. So I didn't. For years, I never did cardio. I worked out at a gym using the weights, and I did stuff at home.
And some Pilates?
And Pilates, yes. I love Pilates. Then I have a new neurologist, and he's more, yes, you can do cardio. However, do it slow. Don't get your, you know, you want to get your heart rate moving, but you don't want to increase the heat level. So I started doing 20 minutes on the treadmill. And my mental attitude, by being able to do that after all of these years being told I can't, it just changed my whole feeling about myself that, yes, I do go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week for 20 minutes only. I don't stay on the treadmill for an hour like a lot of people do. I just do the treadmill for 20 minutes only, and that has helped me mentally and physically, and it's amazing.
Fantastic.
Just by that.
I think Susan made a great point. Exercising helps mood, energy, pain, strengthening. Again, it's not the complete answer for MS. I mean, so it's a good thing to do.
You know something, and I'll take 1 second, but I'm glad you said that, because going back to my pelvic pain, my pelvic pain is almost gone, and thinking about it, the lessening of it is in direct relation to when I started going back to the gym for my cardio.
Right.
And I just thought of that.
Exercise is very important. Okay, fantastic. We've had a great session today, a great healthcare program on multiple sclerosis. We've learned a lot. I think we've helped our patient here. I'd like to thank certainly my sister Susan for being here and willing to share her personal story on multiple sclerosis. We deeply appreciate that. And Dr. Wilson, Rob Wilson, thank you for sharing your expertise on multiple sclerosis. We look forward to hearing from you again. We are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. This is Steve Maskin. Please do not forget, it's great to listen, but it's even better to be a caller. And not just be a caller, visit our website, focusonfemales.com. Go to the Radio Healthcare Clinic page, learn about our program, learn about upcoming topics, and email me the topics of interest to you. We will go ahead and schedule your topic and have a guest expert here and discuss and find answers to your medical problems and help you manage and clarify your medical issues. Once again, next week we have fibromyalgia here on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. See you then.